A couple of years after John Phuong passed away, some people from Bangkok came to the monastery, and they wanted to hear about miracles. What miracles had we seen since John Phuong had passed away? What miracles had I seen while he was alive? And there had been quite a few things about John Phuong that were uncanny. But for this group of people, I decided to say something more important, which is I thought it was miraculous that during all those years I was with him, even though I was a Westerner and he was a Thai, he treated me as a human being, and our communication was on a human level. In other words, our differences in culture didn't seem to get in the way of his compassion for me. Now, I had my problems adjusting to the culture over there, of course, and may have been because I was learning the Dharma in a second language. But there was always this feeling at the very beginning that it was something almost like make-believe. Okay, I will take this on as a game. I didn't think of it in those terms at the time. But I remember one day in particular when it really hit me, I was going through the six elements, which are fairly foreign-sounding teaching. I began to realize, okay, these are talking about things that I'm directly experiencing. The language of the Dharma pointed directly at my experience of my own body, my experience of my own mind. And it was when I was willing to take it on that level that I found that I benefited the most. And the fact that John Phuong was able to communicate on a level that wasn't just Thai to a Westerner is because he was living in line with what you might call the customs of the noble ones. This is a teaching of John's So What you still like to talk about quite a lot. We're here not to practice in line with Western customs or Thai customs or anybody's customs except from the customs of the noble ones. Because the noble ones are the ones who have found how to put an end to suffering. They've understood their minds. They've understood their hearts in a way that allows them to bring suffering to an end. And what this means is that we have to learn how to understand our minds and hearts in that way, too. We can't say, well, now that the Dharma's come here, I want Dharma in line with my language or in line with my way of seeing things. That's putting up a barrier. Because no matter what postmodernists may say, the Buddha was not trying to exert power over people. He was giving them a way of analyzing their minds so they could understand, this is where suffering comes from, this is why it happens, this is how you can put it to an end. And part of putting an end to an end requires that you understand it in those terms. The Four Noble Truths, the factors of dependent arising. These teachings may seem foreign at first, but it turns out that that's an indication of how alienated we are from our own minds or from understanding how our minds work, because these provide precisely the tools that are really useful for taking those processes apart, understanding how we create suffering for ourselves and how we don't have to. So the language here is not just a relic of some power attempt. It's an attempt to show kindness. And we're kind to ourselves when we learn how to take it on and realize these terms are speaking directly to us. It may take some time to sit with them and practice until you see that, oh yeah, it's talking about this thing that I'm directly experiencing inside. But that's time well spent. In a way, you're kind of submitting yourself to the Dharma. But the Dharma is there not to exert power. The Dharma is there to help you find the way to end your own suffering. Because after all, your own suffering, that's probably your most intimate thing. The most intimate thing you experience. And the Dharma is talking about intimate aspects of the mind, intimate aspects of the heart. There were times when I'd describe a meditation experience to a John Fuhring and he'd explain it in different terms. And there were times when I'd be resistant. I said, well, no, it actually seems this way to me. I didn't say it to him, but I thought it. And it's only after I got to know my mind better that I realized, well, he was describing it precise to the way it is happening. It was a problem of my own blindness, that I didn't see it that way to begin with. So try to open your heart to the lessons of the Dharma, and particularly the lessons of the Dharma you don't want to hear, particularly about how much effort has to go into this. Our modern belief is we've learned how to do things in a much more streamlined and efficient way than they did in the past. We often carry that attitude into the Dharma, thinking that the people in the past, they didn't know how quickly or efficiently these things can be done. But the Buddha was the sort of person, if there was an easier path to the end of suffering, he would have taught that. But this is a path that requires right effort. The four bases of success. Three of which now are viewed with disdain in Western Buddhism. Desire, persistence, efforting, and using your powers of judgment. The Buddha said these are necessary for success in the practice. The only one of the bases of success that they still follow is intentness, that you do have to pay attention. But then they say, well, there's no such thing as success or not success. Everybody's already awakened. Well, we're not. If we were already awakened, we wouldn't be suffering. And the Dharma is not a Dharma of make-believe. The Buddha didn't just sit around and think up ideas. What would be a cool teaching to pass on. He put his life on the line. Then he tried all kinds of ways before he found the way that worked. And part of that way is right view, which means you take on the opinions of the noble ones about how suffering should be understood. So you're taking on their culture in terms of the values of how unskillful actions should be abandoned, skillful ones should be developed. And then their language, which the Ajahn's often call language of the heart, for analyzing what is skillful, what is not, how do things get developed, how do things get abandoned. These tools are all there for our own good, for our own happiness. And so it's up to us to open ourselves up so that those tools can really do their work. And it's then when we realize how really well designed they are. And John Lee makes a comparison. He says it's like a recipe for a medicine. And if you've never made the medicine and never used it for a disease, the recipe doesn't have much value for you. It's something that gets stashed away and forgotten in a pile of papers. But if you've ever realized, okay, I've got this disease and this is the medicine I need, and I make the medicine and it works, then you treat that piece of paper with a lot of respect. And it's the same with the practice. You take the Dharma and you put it into practice. You really apply the Buddha's analysis to your mind. He said, this is why you're suffering. You say, okay, I'll admit that. I'll take that on. See if I can understand my mind using his vocabulary, using his perspective. And when you see how it really works, that's why you see why we bow down to the Buddha so much here. That's the appropriate response. As he took the Dharma out of his heart, and it's meant to be taken into our hearts. And that's when you appreciate how good it is. And we chant, the Dharma of the Blessed One is well taught, well expounded. You'll see how really true that is.